This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear, and we're going to have kind of a wild and crazy show today. As most of y'all know, or should know, it is Thanksgiving. And I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. Spend some good time with your family. You know, make sure you hug them, kiss them, tell them you love them and all that. Besides just going out to put fur in a truck, guys, it's important. So do it. And I want to start with a story. And some of y'all are going to think this is really mean and uncalled for and all that stuff in the society we live in today. Guys, I don't live from the society of today. when I joined the military, you know, even back when I played sports, guys did certain things with other guys, and in a weird, unusual way, it's like that's kind of showing you care for somebody. And a good example of what I'm getting to say is I got to talk to a drill sergeant of mine years after I was in basic training, and we actually went out to dinner and stuff, and he was such a cool dude when he wasn't playing drill sergeant. And I remember asking him, you know, and I remember telling him, dude, you were such a prick when we were in basic. I mean, you were just obnoxious. And he goes, well, I was obnoxious to you and maybe about 20 other guys. And I go, well, yeah. And he goes, well, that's because I knew that it mattered that I got through to you guys, and the rest of them I really didn't care about, so I didn't put any effort into them. And that was kind of a weird thing for me to think about. I mean, but that's just kind of the way guys are, before I get into this story. Now, so, like I said, you know, and if you ever get around me or Chip or me, Trapper, or me and Dunlap, or Randy Smith or Red O'Hearn, I mean, we really can bust nuts sometimes with each other. But it's all in a way that it's kind of like, you know, you're all right type thing. And it can get kind of brutal, and none of us gets our feelings hurt over it because we kind of know what it is. And most of you guys are going to know exactly what I'm talking about. You've got buddies you do this with and different things like that. But just so happens, one of these things just happened, and it's really funny. So going into Thanksgiving, or by the time you hear this, I'm going to try to post this tomorrow, which will be Thanksgiving, and that way you can have a smile on your face, or the day after Thanksgiving, because I think this is freaking hilarious. It really is. Now, Travis, my right-hand man, has been with me now for probably 4 years, 5 years maybe, four I'm pretty sure of. I think he started when he was 15, he's 19. And, you know, he's bottled umpteen hundred gallons of stuff for me and different things like that. And, you know, we've become friends. You know, I definitely consider Travis a friend of mine. And I care for Travis. And, you know, and I've got other friends that also really like Travis. And doing what we do, being guys, we show friendship in some weird ways, and this is what happened to Travis. Now, Travis, the reason I can't post this before Thanksgiving is because the story has not ended yet, but it will this afternoon. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. So, Travis, I bought this farm, it's 13 acres, small piece of ground, call it a farm, but I mean, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a small farm. On the very end of it, down on the Squatchie River, there's a section of woods, and this wood line follows the river on both sides as far as you can see. And the rest is open fields, and next to me is a cut cornfield, on the other side is a horse pasture, then on the other side of me is a Bermuda grass farm, and then cattle, but there's really no cover or anything like that. There's not any food plots, there's nothing out there. So, you know, since I own the land, I love eating deer. So I've been going down there in the mornings or evenings, which I have not shot a deer down there yet. And it's kind of a hit and miss. I mean, this is not the way you'd want to run a trap line because, you know, in the size of a football field, I've got to just be there when the deer come through or cross the river or something like that. So, you know, it's not the most advantageous way to go. But, you know, I've talked to Travis several times, and I've always hunted on the ground. I've never had any problem killing anything. And he's a tree stand guy, and I do not like heights. Now, I've jumped out of airplanes. You put me on a 60-foot helicopter and let me go into something like that, I think that's the coolest thing in the world. I don't know what the disconnect is, but it's just there, guys. It really is. You put me on a roof, I'm like a cat on a tin roof then. I mean, I do not like it. It really screws with me. Chip put me on a tree stand last year down in Mississippi that's about 20 foot tall and about as big as one butt cheek, and I stayed up for about 15 minutes before I just lost my nerve, because I knew I wouldn't turn to pull the gun up, and I knew that I wouldn't pull the trigger because I'd be afraid I'd fall out. So it's just not really my thing. But Travis, being the good guy that he is, he bought a tree ladder stand, so I get this correct, a ladder stand to put up on the farm for me. And he brought it over. It's been an ordeal getting that thing together. Neither one of us is like the most mechanical guys with nuts and bolts and instructions. And I've never put a deer ladder stand up. So, you know, this is kind of a new thing to me. I don't trust it. And but, you know, we started on it one day. We got most of it together. And then yesterday, we got it to the tree, and we got these funny little kickback things on there that, from a mechanical point of view, I do not understand what one of them's for, but we did it the way the instructions said anyway. We put a tie strap on the bottom where I could reach it, and as you know, on a ladder stand, you got to go up top, and you got to ratchet that thing to the tree. But at being that tall, there's no leverage for someone to really hold the ladder on the bottom, so you're crawling up there on pins and needles, praying the wind doesn't blow and the whole tree didn't come off the side of the tree. I mean, it's not the safest thing in the world to do, but it's just what it is, apparently. So yesterday evening, he comes in kind of late. We finally get a ratchet strap around that tree up there before it gets absolutely dark. And when I get done recording this show, I'm going over there. And I'm going to put maybe 6 or 7 more ratchet straps on there. And not only that, I'm going to ratchet strap that thing off to other trees. Like I said, I do not like heights, and I do not want it shifting around because I don't want to have a heart attack or pee on myself when I'm up there if a big wind comes. So it's going to look like Spider-Man through the woods where I've got this thing at. But anyway, now we had problems with the ratchet strap yesterday, and it's totally reasonable why. I'm holding the ladder as hard as I can, especially with the ratchet strap that we put around the bottom. But at the top, it's just free floating. It's up against the tree, but any movement on the ladder, and it wants to take it out of the little V thing, it holds it up against the tree. So, I mean, it is like massive pucker factor climbing up that thing. Knowing if you get 15, 18 feet up in there and the thing starts tilting, there's nothing I can do on the bottom to stop it. So to get up there enough to throw the ratchet strap around the tree and get it hooked up where it's good and tight, that took us a while. And I was just going to have some fun with Travis. And I texted Jeff and I said, in a day or two, why don't you text him and ask him to come help you put up a tree stand? Because it's been an ordeal. And just kind of in good jest is kind of what it was. I mean, I would do that to anybody, and I would expect anybody to do that to me. I mean, that's just the way it is. I like practical jokes. So I knew that would kind of rib him a little bit and different things like that. So that's not what happened. Jeff is Jeff. And I'm talking Jeff Dunlap, the death dealer. Jeff Dunlap could not go about it that gentle. So apparently what happened is Travis was finishing for me. We had some wholesale orders going out last night. It was already dark. He comes in, ask him what he's doing, yada, 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 have a good weekend, all that type stuff. Are you coming in tomorrow? He leaves. He runs back in with his cell phone, and he goes, I just got a text. I'm like, okay. Somebody saw us put up the tree stand, and they say they're going to take it. I'm like, what? Because, for one, you can't sneak up on anybody in our woods down here with the drought and the leaves on the ground because you sound like a whole army moving through there. But apparently someone had saw us putting up his tree stand. And it was like he's going to take the tree. This person said he's going to take the tree stand. He don't want us hunting the deer, this, that, and the other. Now, as soon as he said that, and I knew what I told Jeff earlier, I knew this had the stink of Jeff Dunlap all over it. I knew exactly what this was. So I went to play along. Now, this is where this gets really maybe a little bit on the mean side, but in a very loving way. And just the guy side, because that's what guys do. Keep this in mind. So if you're a female listening to this, you're probably going to think me and Jeff are monsters before this is over with, but I promise you guys appreciate this. Maybe not at the time, but somewhere down the road. So Cindy's in here with me. Now, someone that saw us putting up a tree stand somehow had Travis's cell phone number, which should have been a red flag for Travis. And then we could see if anybody was sneaking down on us from across the river, because I own the other side of the river, and we didn't. And that kind of got Travis upset. you know, especially as rough as it's been for us to get that thing put together and get it up. So then he goes, well, I don't, and Cindy said, well, do you recognize the number? And he said, no. I said, Travis, who have you told, man? Who have you been telling that I've been hunting deer down on my property or put up a tree stand? Because I told him not to tell anybody. Because if he does, and I don't care anything about killing a buck, but say he goes down there and kills a halfway decent buck sometime during gun season, I don't want people sneaking in on it. You know, so it's kind of, it's always best just to keep a low profile. And that's the way I did it. So I was already knew it was Jeff. So I already started changing the profile of the thing to, who did you tell that you're helping put up a tree stand? Nobody. I swear, man, I didn't. Well, how do they have your phone number, this, that, and the other? Well, Cindy said, well, what is the phone number? And Travis read off 989. So that definitely told me this was absolutely 100% unequivocally from Jeff Dunlap. And she pulled out her little computer thing and was going to look up the area code. Now, if she would have said Michigan, Travis would have known it was Jeff. Now, we have a new kitten in the house. It's Pesto the Lionheart Ragnar. Is kind of what depends on what we're calling him. And he is a rambunctious all-boy kitten. And he ran down the hall. And I said, did the cat just run down the hall? And Travis turned his head to look. And I go over to Cindy like, you know, don't say a word. So now she knows there's a game going on. She don't know what it is. And we talk about it and this, that, and the other. Travis leaves. Well, Travis, being 19-year-old, can't leave anything alone whatsoever. So what does Travis do? He starts texting this number, which has got Jeff on the other end. Now, guys, whether you like Jeff or you don't like Jeff, let me tell you something about Jeff Dunlap. He's probably one of the quickest-witted guys you'll ever have a conversation with. And he's extremely intelligent. Now, everybody that really knows Jeff knows that. And he's also very observant, which is a dangerous thing to get into a quibble with, unless you're at least somewhere on the same level of intelligence and quick-wittedness and all that with Jeff, because he'll shred you. I've seen him do it at conventions when people try to be smart aleck. He'll basically, you know, strip them all the way down to the rib cage, do it while he's smiling. They walk off knowing they just got absolutely destroyed, and they're smiling about it because it's so funny the way he does it. I mean, he's just very intelligent. So you got Travis, a 19-year-old, against Jeff Dunlap. So they're going back and forth. And, you know, Jeff started doing, he's running out of stuff to say because I talked to him about it this morning. So he just started making stuff up. You know, he voted for, or that this person voted for Kennedy. And then it was, somehow he turned himself into a female that's about 65 years old. So Travis is arguing with a 65-year-old woman that runs around in the woods, according to the text. I'm not sure naked or clothed, but it's regenerating, seeing nature, this, that, and the other. And Jeff kept calling him a doe killer, and you shouldn't do that. And then, you know, I know who both of y'all are. I'm going to come cut the van tires, which should have been another red flag to Travis, but it wasn't somehow. And this went on and on. Now, in the midst of all of this, Jeff ran out of stuff to say. Now, Travis called this number. And everybody that knows Jeff, I want you to picture this in your mind. I would have done anything for recording of this. Jeff has already laid out the game plan that he's a 65-year-old nature freak that lives on the other side of the river. So when the phone rings, Jeff thought that Travis has figured it out, but Travis automatically went on the attack. Because somewhere in this text, Jeff did the ultimate insult. You know, 65 years old, been down here forever, called Travis a Yankee and all the Yankees that come down, and we beat you once, we'll beat you again. And I mean, that's like an ultimate insult to Travis. And so Travis went on full, this blown rooster out, gonna, you know, not take anything from this 65-year-old nature freak that runs around in the woods. Well, Jeff and them start talking. Now, Jeff has got to sound as best he can like a 65-year-old elderly lady, which is what I really want to hear. But they had this conversation. And then towards the end, like I said, Jeff was running out of stuff to say. So he was just making quotes out of movies, which would have been so funny to see Travis's face. It was like, I'm gonna eat your brain. I'm gonna eat your liver with, or your kidneys with fava beans, like out of Silence of the Lambs. Then he would say, you know, run, Forrest, run, like out of Forrest Gump. And he would do patent quotes, and he'd do all this stuff because he didn't know what else to say. And he's trying not to laugh because Travis is apparently saying that we're going to hunt her down and we're not going to take it and this, that, and the other. And then it got even funnier, guys, because Jeff said, I know you work at Academy. And that kind of probably put Travis off because he works part-time for Academy and part-time for me. So he's working Academy Sports, and Jeff goes in the old lady voice now, that do you have to have a receipt to take back a tree stand to Academy? Because that's where Travis got it. And it registered that she was going to take his tree stand that he paid for. She was going to steal it from him and take it back and get a refund. So he said, no, you got to have a receipt. And Jeff said, that's okay, I'll just put it on Craigslist. He goes, well, if you steal our tree stand, we're just going to put another one up. And Jeff, being the way Jeff is, said, fine, I'll put it in the Craigslist that I have two tree stands for sale. Which probably flew all over Travis. Well, this went on, off and on. Now, while he's talking to Jeff, he's texting me. My wife is starting to feel sorry for Travis because he's in the middle of a web that he has no idea what's going on. He's trying to defend his honor. He's trying to defend hunting. He's trying to defend trapping. He's trying to defend me. And Jeff is sitting up there in Michigan trying not to pee himself laughing so hard. Well, after about 3 hours of texting back and forth with both of them and me acting still as ignorant as I have no idea what's going on, and I'm kind of feeding Jeff some stuff, and you know, and I'm kind of firing up Travis all at the same time. Finally, I had to pull the plug and go to bed, so I said, Travis, don't worry about it. Go get some sleep, man. We'll work this out tomorrow, and I'll go check to see if the tree stand's there. Okay, so that's where it was at. Now, Jeff has got Travis so fired up, he probably didn't sleep. He told, because he worked at Academy, and that's where Jeff got his number from, apparently, which it wasn't, it was me, that Travis probably went in there, and I hope he didn't start trying to chew people out for giving out his cell phone number, but hopefully he didn't do that. So when he comes in, the first thing I'm going to tell him is, yeah, I went down there, the tree stand's gone. And the box for the tree stand is still down there, and I'm going to tell him, dude, that old lady just went over and took a great big dump right in your box. Which is going to send Travis off of the far end of the spectrum. He's going to want to go put trail cams or whatever, just something like that. But anyway, I'm going to have to say all this with a straight face because there is no old lady in the woods and the tree stand is absolutely fine. But he's going to think that someone stole it and they crapped in his box. And then I'm going to wait a little while and I'm going to call Jeff on the phone. And I'm going to ask him how his muskrats were doing. And I'm going to kind of recite this story a little bit. And the plan is that after a few minutes of talking, Jeff's going to break into the same quotes that he did as the old lady while it's on speakerphone and Travis can hear it. Now, I don't know if I can take a picture without him catching me to see the facial expression, but it's something that I am literally dying to see, guys, when he realizes it was Jeff the whole time. So that's like the little story of the week that happens around here, which I'll let you know that, guys, that's pretty normal around here. You know, people think I'm too serious and all this, that, and the other. They have no idea. I love humor. I love practical jokes. And it doesn't bother me when someone does it to me because that just means I get to go at them, you know, somewhere in the future. So it's all good. It's all fair and love and war. So that's what it's like. If you're going to work at Predator Control Group, you better have some thin skin because we're going to test it. And Travis is actually starting to put on, I'd say, especially after today, a nice coat of thicker skin because he's going to start figuring this stuff out. It's going to be harder to play jokes on him after we do this probably two or three more times, but we'll see how it goes. Now, that's the story of the week. Hope you find some humor in it. I know I did. And if you know Jeff and picture him talking like a woman, that's worth a grin just by itself. Oh, and the last thing, which I don't know if I should or shouldn't say on here, but somewhere in the conversation when Travis told Jeff that the river was going to run blood with, you know, with red with the blood of deer and all the coyotes he's going to kill and all the rabbits and all this. I mean, Travis was worked up. And apparently, Jeff, in his old lady voice, started offering female physical companionship if he would not kill the deer. That's how crazy this got last night. So I'm going to leave it at that. And I'm going to cover some different questions because there's some really some interesting ones that I've got this week. And I'm saving these so we can talk about them. I said, okay, Clint, I've listened to podcast 153 since I've caught up on the new ones. I understand the whole blocking thing and how it makes coyotes nervous. But did I understand right, a coyote will more than likely always step on the high spot and enter a dirt hole from the backside? If this is so, why wouldn't a person make a hole and on both sides of that place a trap, say a natural grass clump? Yes, I have crappy luck with coyotes. I set on sign location and get mostly out of the wind and terrain. Example, I have a 9-acre farm I trap. Most is fenced in due to cattle. Neighbors don't want anywhere on their property. So I'm limited to a 10-foot path on the south side and maybe a half acre on the north end. Snares are illegal on dry land, but yes, blind sets are in the 10-foot side. See if there's anything else I'm going to read. This is what I have in all red. Oh, he sent me a picture, which you can't see, basically. But and it's showing where he can trap. Now, this is, no one's going to understand this but him on this thing. Guy, when you look at your picture you sent me, there's two really good locations to set on this that I see. Well, there's actually three. Okay, you've got that where the house is at, and you've got the green line going up almost in the state of Tennessee. If you come off on a 45-degree angle on the back corner of the house, you'll see an out of that field, how it kind of goes out, and then it goes back like it's going north, I assume. That point is where you put the trap. The other one is going to be up in the far corner on directly behind the house on the far edge up against the trees. And then if you go from the house and go straight down, you're going to see that tree line, and you've got that rougher area in there that you can set. And what I would do is put my traps on the back side of the trees away from the dirt field where it's a little grown up, and I'd probably put two or three down in there and look for the trails for the blind sets in that. So just from this little thing, that's kind of what I'm seeing there. So let's get back to the question. Okay, I'm not quite sure you're understanding what I'm saying. And his name is Clint, so this is really weird. But, okay, Clint. Clint says, when I'm talking about the high spot, so let's take the trap totally out of the equation, man. Don't think about the trap. Let's say that you've got a 10-square-foot piece of ground, and there's a little bit of rise somewhere in that. Say it's like in the dead center. And then it kind of is a little bit higher on one side. Or maybe in a better example. Okay, you're going down a road. And you know when people grade the road's normally a little bit lower in the middle. And then it kind of is higher outside of the road because that the material of the dirt's been scraped away. Now, see, the road is a level. And then where the old land is, where it's not been scraped, is another level. So in a lot of times, I mean, that can be a couple of feet, but most time it's just 3 or 4 inches. Now, when I'm talking about a high spot, I'm talking about right on the edge of where the old ground is and the new ground is been graded out. That's the spot I'm talking about. Now, the other confusing thing I think you may have heard me say is a coyote is just as likely to step on a high spot as it is a low spot. Now, I'm talking about a trap pattern. I don't like putting little divots over the pan. I don't go to war with people that think that way. It makes no difference to me. Me personally, I want a flat trap pattern because with all the night footage that I've seen of coyotes, they don't really seem to pay attention. So the divot or not a divot, or if the over the trap pan because whatever reason happens to be a half inch taller than the rest of the ground, it really doesn't matter. Not to a coyote anyway. So that I want to clear that up. But I think what you're talking about is like the road grader example. So you got lower in the road and you got higher where the natural field or wood or grass or whatever used to be. The high spot that I'm talking about on that is on the original ground. Now the road, because I want you to think of the way most people would set this up, and it's not a bad way, it's just a different track placement. You've got the road, and you see tracks and scat and stuff going down the road, and you've got this little bit of an elevation where the grader has dug that out over the years, and then that's a perfect place to put in a dirt hole right up against where it goes from the road up to the original ground height, or it could even be, if it's a lot of grading, there's like a little spoil pile, so it's kind of like pushed up, and that's absolutely the highest spot around there. What I'm referring to is if you put your dirt hole where it's facing the road and your trap is on the road, which is downhill, most coyotes, of all the footage that I've seen, go to the higher side of that set, which is, when it's designed backwards like that, is behind the hole. So that's the high ground that I'm talking about, man. That's what I'm referring to. And when you go out in the field, if people that's been with me on instruction or seen me trap, when I'm setting coyote traps, I always try to find, in the general area that I want it, a little bit of higher ground than the rest of the ground, because I know I have a higher percentage of that coyote stepping on that higher ground than he does anywhere else. And this is over and over and over again. This has been shown to me on night footage. I personally think that it is a way for a coyote or a predator or any animal for that matter, if it's not all blocked up with, you know, primrose or blackberries or trees or something, it's just an easy way for him to get above what he's investigating to see it. I really think that's what he's doing. And a lot of times, if you think about it, if you've got your trap in the side of that little raised spot where the road's at and your trap's out in front of it, you catch coyotes that way. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you don't. I've caught a lot of coyotes doing it that way. But if you make a dirt hole, especially a big one, think about a coyote's mindset. How many times in his life has he probably seen a chipmunk or a squirrel or rabbit, or out west, badgers or groundhogs here in the east, or those little bitty things everybody hunts with the 22s and stuff up in, in the Midwest, little pocket gophers. So a coyote, when he's young, he sees the hole and he runs to the front of the hole and the animal just goes down the hole. And he may be able to outdig it or something like that, but most of the time, that he's probably not, and he's not going to get something to eat. So I'm sure with a little bit of reasoning ability, which they definitely have, and learning ability, which they definitely have, that coyote over time figures out if there's a hole and he spots it and he thinks there's something that's going to be in there, it's smarter to sneak up on the back of it than it is to walk up to the front door and ring the doorbell. You know, it just kind of makes sense that way. I mean, if you were going to try to sneak up on a rabbit in that situation where you had low ground to high ground, and it could look out the hole, and you walked up to the front of it, it's going to go deeper in the hole. So if you were going to try to club this rabbit, you're going to sneak up behind it and wait for it to stick its little head out, then you club it. You know, and I think that has a lot to do with it. But the higher ground, I think, is more than not just a way for him to be able to maybe get better air currents for smell, or it's for visual. All I know is I've seen that pattern over and over and over again, and I saw it for years in Texas, but I didn't quite understand exactly what was going on to the night vision footage, because down there they have caliche roads, and there's a lot of sand, and they grade those things all the time, and a lot of times you'll have where the road grader kind of kicks the dirt out on the side, and it'll be 12 inches to 2 feet above where the road bottom is, and you see the tracks right there on the side, so you pop in a dirt hole set, and there was always tracks up on the top side. Not saying they won't come off of that and eventually get in your set, but if I know that's the preferred placement of the coyote's feet to be on that high knoll, even though it could be just a couple inches or 6 inches or a foot, that's where I want to have my trap personally, because that's where he's going to go. And there's a lot less guessing around going, you know, about that. Now, what you're talking about, putting a trap and putting a dirt hole on each side, I don't see anything wrong with that, man. I don't think, from what I'm talking about, it's really apical. But, I mean, a really cool set that you can do for coyotes that is very, in the right situations, is very productive. If you've got two grass clumps that are, say, 15, 20 inches apart, and you're really close to the travel way of the cat or the coyote, you can punch a dirt hole where they face each other on those grass clumps. So it looks like something is coming out from one hole and running into the other hole. And then what I'll do is I'll bed the trap in between those, and I will sift it in so it's totally blended, whether it's grass or hay or pine straw or leaves or whatever it is. Then I will gently rake that trail from one hole to the other. Now, see, that's as natural as you can get for a coyote. And for a coyote to work that set, either one of those, he's going to have to come down in front of them some way, no matter what's around them. And it's not something I use all the time, but if it's very obvious that I can pull that off, I'll put that set in a heartbeat. I've caught lots of coyotes with that. You know, I wouldn't try to force it. You know, I wouldn't like move stuff around and try to do it. But if it's easy and it's something you can do, that way you can have a dirt hole on both sides of your trap. And then no matter whichever one he's trying to sneak up on, if he goes to smell the other hole, he's going to be really close to being on your trap to begin with. Just a neat little set that you can think about when you're doing that. I hope that helps you out, man, because, you know, sometimes it's harder to explain little variances in terrain with audio like a podcast than it is if you were with somebody or saw it. Because I guarantee you the first time you saw it, you'd go, makes perfect sense. You know, especially when you understand what the coyotes are doing. But hearing it sometimes, because, you know, when I'm talking about that and other people are talking about having a low spot over their pan or you don't want high dirt over your pan or whatever, all that can get kind of confusing, and I definitely understand that. So, Mr. Clint, this is the other Mr. Clint, and I hope this helps you out. So, we're going to go to one that's, I hate to say that I told you so, but I think I kind of told you so. And, let's see here we go. Okay. This is from, Sean, and it is, Government Tracking is the name of the email. Now, guys, let me tell you, this morning I had to call. Apparently the state of Tennessee is getting upset because I do not pay sales tax in Tennessee. And as if you live in Tennessee and you've ever tried to buy anything from Tennessee, you will see that you cannot buy anything from me if you live in the state of Tennessee. I'll send you to F&T or Wildlife Control Supplies or Hilltop or somewhere else. I do not sell in the state of Tennessee. There's a couple of reasons, which I'm not going to go into. It's all where government bureaucrats were being peckerheads. And I finally just said, fine, you will not get one more dime from me. It's my little stand to the government, if you want to call it that. But that's just the way it is. So when they get the other parts of my tax forms, they see that the income is very different than what I'm showing on the state as far as sellable tax, because mine is zero. I haven't paid them any tax at all in the state of Tennessee for a couple of years now, and I'm not going to. So that is why I had to talk to them. And when I explained that to them, what was interesting about that was it was the same form that this is being asked about. So this is, found this on Grinwald's website this morning. Now, guys, I want you to listen to me very clearly about something. This is not anything to get upset with Grinwald's about. Grinwald's is a massive international business. and they're good guys. And the world, the way that it is catching up with trappers. So they're going to hit the bigger fish first. And I've also seen hints of this coming from NAFA and the fur harvesters. So it's not them. It's other people on the outside doing this. So he says, I found this on Grimwald's website this morning. I remember you talking about it in a radio show about the government tracking trappers and IRS crap. I thought this would be interest to your listeners. Okay, now this is a note that's on Grimwald's. Traceability will become more and more important in the fur trade. Our largest customer has requested... Now this is from Grimwald. Like, this is way above their level, guys. It's not something they're trying to do. They're not trying to help anybody do this. They're not trying to get trappers in trouble. It's a regulation they got to deal with. So, like I said, don't take this out on Grimwald's. If you are, you're going to be an idiot about it. Okay, this is from them. Traceability will become more and more important in the fur trade. Our largest customer has requested this form from all our coyote hunters and trappers. You are not required to fill it out, but it will be very helpful. All trucks will have copies, or you can download one here. Because if you never dealt with Grimwald, if you're around the area, they have pickup points. So what they're saying, and this is the way regulations start, is it's called a nudge, and it's called getting someone used to doing something or the idea of doing something before they're forced into it, so it's not such a strange concept to them. An example, your government has professional nudgers that are in the government that get you to do stuff on a daily basis that you don't think that anybody's making you do. And I give you a good example. They need your money in your 401k to keep the banks rolling. That's got to go into Wall Street. So, and you know, it used to be you had the option of signing up for a 401k or some other type of thing if you wanted to do any investments from inside the company. And what they found out, that only about 50% of employees would even look into it because they had to do something and they didn't understand it. So the government have psychologists that look at problems and figure out a way to nudge, or a better word is probably motivational propaganda, or mind screwing the person that they're doing this to, because they're very good and they understand human behavior. So they come out with a policy to get more people to invest in IRAs, which most of y'all are probably going to know exactly what I'm getting ready to talk about. So all of a sudden you go to work for a job, and if you don't want to be in the IRA, you've got to go through the hurdles to jump out of it. So if you're going to go through the effort to jump out of it, the psychiatrists know that it's easier for you just to give in and do it. And there's professional people in the government, and they actually have offices, and they're known as nudgers. So your government is actually paying people to screw with you. Congratulations, America. But that's what's going on. Then they found out if they did it that way, they need the money in the Wall Street to keep cash flow. So the easiest way to get it is through people's paychecks going into an IRA, or not an IRA, but a 401k. So now they're up to 90% participation rate in 401ks, whether you think that's good or not, because they used brain science and behavior science to get somebody to do that. And just like I was talking about last week, you'll notice when stuff starts happening, you know, if you're not sure about it, like being in a cashless society, you'll start seeing it on TV, then you'll start seeing it, hearing it in radio, then there'll be stories about it on the news, and then there'll be a big argument, and then it'll kind of go away, then something will happen. But in your brain, whether no matter how smart you think you are, a new idea, you resist. That's just human nature, because all the way back through, you know, being hunter-gatherers, you just didn't go out and try something new because it could kill you. You just didn't go eat the berry off that plant if you didn't know what it was. You had to gradually be brought into testing it and trying it, see if it made you sick, you died, you got diarrhea, whatever. And over time, it becomes accepted way of thinking about a new berry, per se. You know, that's the way our genetics are made up even today. So if the government comes out and goes, everybody's, we got to have 90% of everybody in the 401k system, people are going to balk. But if they started talking about how good it is, which you see it all the time, you've got all the liars on all the shows telling you about how stable the stock market is because it's going up for no reason, the economy's not any better, you know, but that money's, you know, real, so you need to jump in on this. All the professional liars that tell you stuff like that, they're nudging you into doing this. And that's what's happening with the tax forms and the other license forms that are going to be probably more mandatory over time. This is nudging trappers into this. So it's saying you do not have to have it. And I'm going to read what this is. Okay. Okay, traceability document. This is from Grandma's. Please type or print required information in ink. A signed copy of these pages must be provided each time a hunter trapper makes a sale. And this is coming from whoever their biggest customer is. Many coyotes for products being sold in the European, Canadian, American, Russian markets. It's necessary to show that they are being taken humanely. Humane trapping hunting is required in international treaties. While hunting is considered humane, at the outset, trappers will need to be sure they follow the provincial, state, and tribal regulations and later best practices. See, that just burns my butt right there. Because if anybody cared about that, I wouldn't have to use a rubber jaw trap in the state of Tennessee because the BMP showed it to be a piece of junk. But that's neither here nor there. This certificate will be available to the manufacturer. Date. Trapper's name, this is what you fill out. Trapper's license, when it expires. Providence, where animals are taken. Sold to, number of pelts sold. Were the animals trapped in accordance, yes or no? There's a bunch of questions. Now, you may be thinking, well, I don't have to sign that right now. And you don't, but this is what happens. They're slowly bringing this online because outdoorsmen by nature will balk at something very quick. And what they're doing is they're getting your name and your license. Now, as soon as they have your name and your license in the world that we live in, they also have your tax records, they have your bank accounts, they have your savings accounts, they know when you get gas, they know what you buy at the grocery store, they know this. So let's say that you generate 50 grand at whatever your job is, your business is, and you're selling 500 pelts and you're up at Grandma's and they write you a check for 20 grand, say, or whatever it would be. So let's say 10 grand. Well, once they have this, then they can automatically, whenever they feel like it, do a quick search on a database, which will basically tell them what type of underwear and what type of Coke you like to drink. Is the income that went in or out of any bank accounts or anything that you dealt with, does it match what you bring from a job? Do you have another business? Was there any type of inheritance, yada, 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 gifts, whatever? So that doesn't match. So let's say you go to, and I'm not even going to mention Grimwalls, we're just going to say Fur Buyer 1 because this has nothing to do with Grimwalls. So Fur Buyer 1, you go sell 10 grand worth of fur, you make $50,000, You got to cash the check somewhere. It's going to be documented. Even if you pull it back out in cash, you put it in your savings accounts, whatever. When they run all of this database, you're going to have a $10,000 thing. It's not going to match. So what's an otter automatically going to think? He's a trapper. He sold fur. He's got $10,000 more that he can't account for with a job or with inheritance or a gift from a relative or something like that. That's on his tax form because they have all that. And now we're going to go after them for back taxes, and we're not just going to do it for this year because we're going to start on this year, then we're going to see that he's hiding money. Now we're going to go back 5 years, and we're going to string his butt up like he's at a witch hunt. That is what this is down the road. And it's not just our industry. They're doing this to all different kind of industries that used to be more cash-based. You go to certain flea markets and you're going to pay sales tax all of a sudden because now you've got little government dudes running around. So if you want to sell your grandmother's quilts, they want their money from it. It's not just trapping. That's just the way that it is. But this is one of those guys I wish that I was not right. So I really appreciate that coming in. It's and the reason I know all this is coordinated, because being a corporation like I am, when they run a database on certain corporations, I just happened to got picked on the sales tax of Tennessee. They could see, they already know my bank accounts. They already know savings accounts. They know PayPal accounts. They know every form of income that comes through my business. And the state's going, there's way more income than he's showing at the state. So it's flagged, and now it's an audit. But this is going to be an easy one to fix, because I've already talked to him and go, you're not getting money because I haven't taken any money. And I've got proof, so I'm going to have my web guy run it off the database, and you'll see that I make no sales to anybody inside the state of Tennessee. And if you try to buy something from Tennessee, you will see I treat you like you're Afghanistan, and I do not sell you anything. So we had an interesting conversation, and he really didn't know what to say to all that, but he basically said, well, send us all of your invoices that are numbered and have the states that they went to. We'll go over them, and yeah, and it'll be cleared if what you're saying is true, which it is. So that is what's going on. So I mean, I appreciate that. That's really cool. So I'm gonna send back his little, we're gonna talk about this on Trapping Radio, and I'm gonna go to the next one. Now the next one is a really cool thing, just because I think it's gonna be something that most guys need to think about a little bit more. And this is from Bill. Okay, there's like three or four of these, so I'm going to try to start. Okay, this wasn't in about what I started, but this is in. I think this is a good little quick topic, a little blurb for trappers. Tell me more about Monster Grass Bait. Does it have a temperature range in which it works? We typically have a week of weather in the 40 to 60 range. Then it's highs in the 30s for 2 weeks, and it's in the 20s on down. Can you give me some ideas of its calling power in the 20 to 35 range? So what I did is I've actually sent this back to him. And he knows I'm putting this up here along with his other stuff. And what I told him, it's simple. Monster Grizz Bait, guys, is a sweet bait. And earlier in the season, and this is going to depend on where you're at, where you're early or late season. Most time, our late season here don't start till January, because where we're at in the south. You know, but up north, if you already got snow on the ground, your early season is gone. And what I'm talking about early season is how raccoons react to bait and lure during certain temperatures. So early, they're trying, by nature, they know they gotta have as much fat as they can. So they eat everything they can with carbohydrates to get their little fat bellies as big as they can get them, because it keeps them warm and their body can feed off of that fat throughout the winter. Now by doing this, just like people, if you eat a lot of carbohydrates, you get pretty plump. And if you only ate carbohydrates, you would get really plump. And then eventually your muscles would start breaking down, and so would your organs, because you're not eating a lot of protein. So what happens with raccoons, as close as I can tell, is earlier, whatever your season is earlier, and that's in the life of the coon, keep that in mind. If it's, you know, gets down in the 15 or 20, but you know, it's kind of up and down, staying around the freezing mark, that's early temperatures. Monster Grizz Bait works good for that. They're trying to eat carbs at that time to get as much fat on they can. Now, when you get later in the year and it never gets above freezing, you got snow on the ground, and you know the creeks are iced up and different things like that, the raccoon automatically starts looking for forms of protein, because the raccoon is smarter than people is when it comes to their diet, and they realize they must eat protein or they're going to get really sick and die. That's when, what I told him in the email is, when it stays cold, I switch over from Monster Grizz Bait or Coon Crack, and then I will use Federales, which is a meat-based predator bait, and that's what I switch over in my Freedom Brand 1 and 2s. Because a raccoon, when it's really cold, will be more out to go after the protein than he will the sweet. Not saying you can't catch raccoons with sweet, but they're trying to get as much protein back into their system as possible, because they've been gorging on berries and corn and everything else, which is just pure carbohydrates, to get as much fat as possible. they know their body seems to be instinctively know they got to eat protein, so that's when they go to that. So early season monster grizz bait is good depending on where you're at and where the coon temperatures are at. And then no matter if you use my bait or somebody else's, guys, if you've never done it, try switching over to a milder predator bait, not one that's loaded with skunk and stuff like that, not one that smells like a, you know, a four-month-old dead cow's butthole either. You know, you want to have something that's actually like food, and Federales definitely is that. And a raccoon will really gorge on Federales. So, you know, whether it's mine or somebody else's, just keep that in mind. And then we're going to go to this other one because it's lessons he's learned, which are pretty good so far this season. Okay, this last Friday, a huge snowstorm was heading our way. Some parts of the state got over a foot of snow. We got rain and wind. I was pulling canine sets in anticipation of the storm, and the fact that I am facing jury duty, I won't have much time to run them. Anyway, between bouts of rain, I got my last coyote. The immediate area had produced a large male and full 3 weeks before. This set was a remake dirt hole with Federales and a small gland lure. The gland lure had been refreshed a week before, but no national bait had been added. This is what I've learned this season. Federales bait worked well. Almost all my dirt holes with Federales were at least worked. Some actually caught fur. Number two, using the knowledge I gained in Teachers of the Night dirt hole and flat set videos, I adjusted my trap placement. Now, see, guys, this is what I was talking about between the back of the hole or the higher ground around your set. This is what he's referring to. I adjusted my trap placement, so, and it has resulted in many catches I don't think I would have made otherwise. Number three, critters do move more prior to weather changes. We had full 2 weeks of 48 and 65 degree weather. Heavy coated coon weren't being active. Fox and coyotes have been active a little bit more, but activity increased a lot just before the rain or snow event. Now, to me, this is a cool thing to think about. And you listen to fishermen and deer hunters and all that. You got a big storm coming in. Animals get more active. They need to feed. They know that if it's a bad storm, they could be hungry for a storm. They could be hungry for a while, so they gorge on anything they can find. Deer do it. Cows do it. Horses do it. Dogs do it. And you do it. You may not notice it, but you definitely do it. So that is true. But see, here's a second part of that I want to take just a minute to discuss with you guys. Right after that storm, it happens again. Now, he pulled his traps. He had jewelry deer and stuff. I get that. Big snowstorms, I'd probably pull them anyway. I'd be heading south, but if I was going to stay there, I would be pulling them anyway. So you don't have traps you can't find if you get 2 feet of snow or something like that. But like if for guys, when it's not in snow and you got these great big thunderstorms going, right before the thunderstorm, you get a lot more animal activity. You get more after the storm. After. My biggest catches on coyotes are always after the big storm. And I mean, like, if it quits raining at 1 o'clock in the morning and the wind calms down and the hail stops, I know the next day, if I've done my job right, I'm going to have a monster catch from coon, fox, cats, and coyotes. Now, the difference is, and when, and I know y'all are probably sick of me preaching about weather all the time. The reason that is so, that I preach that so much, I get on my little soapbox and, you know, scream it from the pulpit, I guess. If you don't work out the weather, you never get to see the massive catch that comes after the storm. Because if you're just putting in dirt holes, you're out of business. If you're bedding your trap in a way that it gets washed out, you're out of business. So that's the reason I went to using a lot of flat sets. I don't want low spots over my trap at all. I want to have a way that the water can drain off of my where my trap bed is at, either on a small angle or something like that. Perfectly level to me is very dangerous when it comes to a trap bed. Water's going to stand on it. So you don't want that. You know, if I know that if I've got an option to put a dirt hole where it's straight in the side of a bank, water's not going to fill that up. If I put it at a 45 degree angle, it's going to. The portable pockets. I don't care how much it rains, if you can keep your trap working, you're still catching after the storm. That's one of the reasons I like them so much. That is what I want to get you thinking about. You need unequivocally to be set up to take advantage after the storm, not just before, because you're only getting 50% of the benefit of a big, you know, raging storm coming through your area. And 50% is better than none, I guess, but I'd rather have 100% every single time. But he's absolutely right how it does pick up. You know, when I went out to trap in Iowa for coon, when I first got out there, first 3 or 4 days, it was in the 60s. That was heartbreaking for as much work and traps as I had out. Now, when it started cooling off, everything started working right, and it was a lot better. Here, it's interesting how temperatures and stuff make a big difference to animals. We do best in our area when the temperatures are somewhere between 40 and probably 20. That's when, especially I'm talking coyotes now, that is when the bigger catches happen. When it's over that, you still catch, but it's not as good. And when it gets colder than that, that's such a shock to our animals down here. When we get down to 0 or 5, they just don't do very much. Now, someone in Michigan, 0 degrees may be a warm-up, you know, or Minnesota or South Dakota or Montana, somewhere like that. So it's very different of where you're trapping. Now, you go down to South Texas, and it drops down in the 30s, which it does. Your coyote catch is going to suck. Those animals have no hair, and they ain't going anywhere, especially if the wind's blowing. You know, down there, your best coyote catches are when the nighttime temperatures are in the 50s, and they don't get above probably 75. That's the range for South Texas. You know, so it's very different where you're at. So when you hear people talk about stuff, you've got to think a lot more. You can't have a reductionist way of looking at trapping, because it's a system, and a system is very complex. So that, I just want to talk about that. Make sure your traps can work after the big rain. Okay, here's another great point, Bill. The bulk of my canine catch was within 5 miles of our city, 100,000 people. This is probably the resident canine population instead of dispersal population, but the animals are there and in trappable numbers, at least these locations. So, and at least at these locations, the local human population is controlling its dogs and cats. Now, this is one, especially for younger guys, and if you're younger, and I mean you've been trapping for less than 5 or 6 years, I'm calling you a younger guy, even if you're older than me. For a younger guy, this is hard to take, because it's just like guys when they start deer hunting. If you want to have the biggest, baddest, healthiest deers in the world, find out some wood strips around some neighborhoods, and a couple of little small farmers have got some apple trees and corn growing, and you'll have the healthiest deer in the world. But it's not very romantic when you think about that as far as going out and be the master great white, you know, buffalo hunter. It's just not the same. So what do people do? They run out as far away as they can from the city, because it's got to be better out here because there's less people, and they drive past most of the best deer. And the same thing happens with cats, fox, and coyotes, and even on sometimes, depending on your agriculture base, raccoons. Like here in the valley where I live, we do have some agriculture and open fields and people garden and stuff like that. There's sheep, there's goats, there's some cows, stuff like that. Now, when most people see my area, especially taking instruction, they want to run up the top of that mountain where it's big woods and this, that, and the other. Guys, there ain't nothing up there. There's really not much out there. There's not a lot to eat. There's not a lot of prey species, so you don't have a lot of predators, and it's just not a lot out there. So a lot of times, I'm better off. I've got places within a half a mile of my house that I can go and catch 2 or 3 bobcats a year, several otter, a bunch of raccoons, and some coyotes. I mean, just right here. And it's our valley's not rural to the point of like it's being out in the middle of Indiana somewhere where cornfields everywhere. I mean, there's houses. It's hard to go anywhere. We just don't have big sections of land here. So someone lives there. But this is where majority of the animals are, not way off in the middle of the boonies somewhere. That may be more fun, and it could be more relaxing, and you definitely have less people conflict, but that's not always where the animals are at. When I go after red fox or coyotes, I love finding pinch points between cities of population, and by that I mean it could be as small as Dunlap of 5,000 people, and a barrier of some kind. That could be a steep mountain range, it could be an interstate, it could be a large creek or a small river, or a big river for that matter. It could be, like a road that's got the big concrete barriers on the side that the animals just really have a hard time going over. When I can get between that barrier and that population of people and have some land that I can trap, it's happy days are here again. And that's what you're looking for a lot of times. So, but I could just as easily drive 45 minutes out on top of one of these plateaus and find some really rural area, and my coyote numbers and cat numbers are going to go down. And that's just the way it is. Now, really thick, heavy agriculture that still has trees in play and stuff like that, and a lot of undergrowth, that probably could be different with that type of agriculture. But here in the East, it's just not, you know, and that's very different from going to Iowa or the Delta Mississippi, where you got 1,000-acre fields and such that are just clear cut basically after the corn's cut. You know, all that ground didn't really help you very much. So you have to think about all this stuff when you're out doing it. So if you're a younger guy and you think you got to go way out in the boonies, you're probably driving past the best trapping that you can do, which is right on the outside of that population. And you're going to have to learn to deal with people when you do that. By asking permission, you're going to be on smaller places, stuff like that. But it really makes a big deal. Depending on where you're at, because what this says, at these locations, the local human population is controlling its dogs and cats. Now, guys, that's geographical. The farther up north you get, where you get more rural intensive and everybody's watching and telling everybody else, and you let your dog go and the dog catcher's there in 20 minutes because you got 14 neighbors call you in because you just let him run around the yard or something. Very different than down here. You get from Kentucky probably all the way down to middle Florida, over to North Carolina, and as far, I don't see dogs in Texas really, but I've never trapped in East Texas, but over in Arkansas, people just let their critters run. So keep that in mind, depending on where you're at, because that could be a different variable you're going to have to deal with. Okay, it may have been the perfect storm of events, but I think we could possibly run a local canine line without having to drive excessively. Good locations do exist, and it's a matter of ringing doorbells, making contacts, getting traps and baits where the canines are going to be. I've got three coyotes within a city block of a major road. Absolutely, Bill. I mean, that's you're right on. If you live like somewhere around like Cleveland, Ohio, or Chicago, dude, you got more coyotes in those cities than I've got out here in the country. I mean, to run away from your biggest population doesn't make sense. And the reason the coyotes stack up against population, you have garbage, you have small animals that are running around, you have more rice around the little, you know, the gentleman farms and stuff like that. There's more food for a scavenger, which is a coyote if he has his druthers, is closer to a human population. So that's why they're there. Pre-baiting with fire grease helps a lot. My method is to drill a 24x4-inch hole, pour in the fire grease, set the area a week later. Absolutely, man. I mean, that's an old school way of setting that works just as good now as it has always worked. And, fryer grease is cheap. I personally have found that stuff that's fish been cooked in works better than others. I wouldn't go out and use, for anybody that's thinking about this, don't get overly creative with this. Don't go out and try to use dog food or meat scraps or anything. Well, you could with meat scraps, but I wouldn't go and put any type of lure that you're going to use during the season whatsoever. Now, if you wanted to be crazy on the competitive side with someone that you know that's going to be trapping the same area, if you know he uses, you know, lure A and bait B, and you wanted to go and you wanted to be really competitive, if that's your nature of way to look at it, well, you could load everything up with his bait and lure before season, and by the time he comes around, it's not going to hold any interest. I'm just letting you know about some of the ways that some of the professional trappers sometimes get a little bit of advantage over the locals. Just saying. Okay. So he had one more on the same lines. And crap. Computer's a little slow. I'm still using something from 14 years ago. Okay. Then this is the last part. He said, I asked around, found out local residents don't have pets. Apparently they have learned busy roads meant dead dogs, so they don't have free-ranging pets anymore. This may not be the case for everyone, but it should be included in your podcast. Absolutely. I mean, you get around, like I go visit some friends up around Columbus, Ohio. You just don't see free-ranging dogs and pets. You come down to Tennessee and drive up and down the road, you're going to see 1,000 dogs a day. I mean, that's just the way it is. Feral cats running all over the place. It's just, it really depends on where you're at. And the more usually upscale, like I said, and the more places that have more rules. I mean, I've been at friend's house and they wanted the cat to go outside. They had to put it on a leash because it was either city or state law. And that was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life, to have to go let a cat out on a leash. But if not, they get a fine. I mean, in places like that, you're pretty safe that there's not going to be pets running around. I mean, if you got to leash a cat to go outside for a little bit. So just keep that in mind, man. And those are all good points, Bill. I appreciate you sending that my way. And then I've got one more quick one. And this one is from Jesse. And then I'm going to get ready to go eat some turkey. Where you at? Where you at? Oh, not supposed to ever have downtime. There we go. Okay. This is just a couple of questions from Jesse. What's the quickest drowning rig you've ever used? What do you think of tangled drown sets? Like you take a T-bar halfway down the chain, the coon will get tangled up on the T-bar. Okay, that's one question. Yeah, I've done that a lot. If that'll work. If you've got a game warden that's going to pressure you on that, because technically, in most states, like I said, technically, but that don't mean the game warden's going to agree with you, that would be considered a drowning stake. Especially if you're going to do that, though, don't use good chain. The best thing to use for a T-bar and a drowning rod for coon or something like that is to get the twin loop chain, the real cheap stuff no one would ever put on a coyote trap, like you hang from a swing outside on your porch, that type of chain. That kinks up and binds up really quick. And you can take a 4-foot chain on a T-bar that's half out of the water and wrap that a coon up out in the deep water super, super quick. I've actually done a lot of beaver that way by using the twin loop. And most of the time, if I'm doing it for beaver, which is another quick way, is I will put two T-bars half in, half out of the water and let them kind of do the racetrack around, especially with a twin loop. So he's staked to the one closest to the bank, and another foot out, I'll put another T-bar, just a piece of re-rod, or if there's like beaver sticks that are good and hard and you can beat that down in the ground, the coon or beaver or even otter, they'll wrap up around those two and take the link out, and they'll tangle up real quick and they'll drown. I mean, that's the fastest. Now, the most sophisticated, fastest one is a drowning rod, if you've got the ground to do it, which means you got to be able to push the end in. For a raccoon, it needs to probably go in about a good solid 8-10 inches with decent soil. And for beaver, you probably need to be able to go in about 14 to 2 feet with decent soil. Now, if you're in like what you call up in Michigan, that goose crap or whatever, you know, where you sink up your gonads in 2 inches of water, you're going to have a lot more of that in there. But that's a sophisticated drowning system that is really, really fast. It is not as fast as a T-bar. And when I do use those, most of the time it's because I'm around people or it's going to be right inside of the road or something like that. So, I mean, those are definitely the quickest one. And this is one that I've never really thought about, so I don't have a good answer for this. But do you do any hand stretches for putting up fur to save your hands? My whole hand and arm locked up me the other day while skinning, and that hurt. I've been doing stretches like a tarsal dude. Just curious what you do. I've never done any. I mean, I may like pull back on my fingers or something, man. But I've never like done stretching or anything like that. Most of the time, I try to keep. If my hands start getting really sore, like I said, you may pull back your wrist or something like that. Just get stuff kind of stretched out. But most of the time, what I do is I notice it more in the mornings, and I'll run them just under pretty hot water, and it kind of forces all the blood to go there, and it feels better. I mean, I don't have a really good answer to that. And the last thing that he said, what do you think of using coon or beaver bones for bone broth? And if I posted some stuff on Facebook, guys, under Clint Locklear on bone broth, and it kind of almost went berserk on how many people are commenting. But so that's where this is coming from. I've talked about it before. Meat Trappers talked about it. I don't know if I would really want to try coon unless we was in some desperate situations. Coon is just not one I've really figured out how to make where I really know it's delicious. And as long as there's other stuff, like beaver to me is delicious. So I have not done beaver bones for bone broth, but I will be. And I will still be using chicken feet for collagen inside of the bone broth for extra collagen. Because if you've got, and I've talked about this before, you got knee problems, elbow problems, back problems, and you go and you get a peel and it's got some collagen in it, and you take that peel, and all of a sudden 3 weeks later you start feeling better. It's what they sell at the drugstore. Dude, you make a good beef bone broth or turkey from the Thanksgiving tomorrow night, keep all the bones. And you put, 3/4 of a pound of chicken feet, which you probably have to go to a Mexican place or a Chinese place to get. And they're already going to be cleaned and boiled and sterilized and all that. But then I'll roast those just like I do the bones and put that in the bone broth. When you go to dump that bone broth out after it cools off, it's going to look like the consistency of Jell-O. There's no liquid form to that anymore. So you have to spoon it out, and as soon as you put heat to it, it liquefies. You drink it before it cools off. You never know that it's that thick. It's delicious. And I want you to think about just some little bit of critical thinking. When you add the chicken feet, or you can use hoofs off of your deer. You could try, which I haven't done, and I may make a batch just for excitement one time. Is you could skin a beaver tail and put the beaver tail in a bone broth, because that's going to have a ton of collagen in it, plus it's going to have a lot of good fat. But the flavor of the beaver tail fat is not appealing any of the way I've ever tried it. But I may try it for the collagen if I can overtake that weird flavor that it's got with the bones of deer or beef or something like that. So you could try the tail. The bones would be awesome, I guarantee you. If you skint a beaver and you took the back straps out for breakfast and eggs one morning, and you kept the liver, if you eat liver and eat the liver, take the castors out, make sure that's good and clean. You don't have beaver oil slathered all over it. You could literally, at that point, after what I would do after the back straps is I would probably take most of the hams off, because they're good just by themselves. But there's still going to be a lot of meat. I would take my handy trapping axe and whack that thing right in the middle, and probably right at the joints on the leg, so I could fit that into a crock pot better. And once I rinsed it out and everything where the guts were at, that's what I would use. All that little extra excess meat, you're going to have all the collagen in the backbones and the hips and different things like that. I would try that. If it doesn't gel up like I'm telling you to, don't let your kids see that, for goodness sake, or they'll never drink it. Then I would add some chicken feet, or you could do deer hooves or cow hooves, pig's feet. You know, as weird as that sounds, what you're wanting is the collagen that makes those up. So, no, I haven't, but I'm getting ready to with the beaver, just because it's going to be so plentiful. Like I said, I need to catch about 300 of them bad boys just so I have enough castor for my own lure usage to sell. So that's what's going to be going on. So everybody, that's the end of Trapping Radio this week. I hope everybody had a good, either, depends when this comes out, either had or is going to have a good Thanksgiving, and go out and enjoy the wildlife, guys. And remember, every time you're doing something, you should be learning something. So I'll talk to y'all next week. I'm out.
They don't need me in their movies. They never listen to my song. They said I was just wasting my time. Man, that got me thinking. Man, I'm really sinking. I really had a flash this time. Hell, I had no business leaving, and nobody would be grieving. I better get on back to Tulsa time.
Thank y'all so much for supporting Farm Aid.